Hello and welcome to another episode of the Preferred Walk-Ons podcast. This is Michael McGraw here with Michael Schutt, and we have champions in men's and women's basketball. Congratulations to South Carolina completing the undefeated season under Don Staley, knocking off Caitlin Clark. And congrats to UConn, a repeat champion, only the third repeat champion since the tournament expanded in 1985. Well, how do you feel about that?
For all of the ups and downs and the upsets and the runs by, you know, certain unheralded ACC teams in the men's tournament, we kind of got what we expected on both sides of things. And both games, you know, when you think about it, both games, both national championship games featured one seeds that we all kind of would have expected to be there a few months ago. So it's interesting, right? When the tournament turns out this way, where you have, you know, kind of the typical wild March stuff, but then you get to the end and it's still kind of the chalky, really good teams there that you expected to be there. So it was cool to see South Carolina kind of get their revenge from last year against Caitlin Clark in Iowa. I think that, again, it was sort of like a, I found the parallels between how the two championship teams operated kind of interesting. So both UConn and South Carolina, several times over the course of the year and in the tournament as well, would kind of play close games through halftime and then come out like a buzzsaw in the second half. And that's sort of what we saw in both championship games, I thought. They were both fun to watch, but, you know, the result wasn't anything that, if you had told me in January, December, even November, this is what we would end up with, I wouldn't have been shocked.
Yeah, I've seen so many stats that have come through on both championship games. One thing I haven't seen, maybe you has there ever been, or when was the most recent time where the number one overall seed won both men's and women's? Because I haven't seen that.
Ooh, I haven't seen that either. It doesn't feel like it's happened in a long time. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think through some of the most recent years. The last one overall seed to win on the men's side was Louisville in 2013.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I think, like you said, it was a very chalky tournament. And, you know, the men's side, I think they flashed up this graphic last night during the game that the overall margin of victory in all the games was like over 14, which was the second highest of any tournament in history. So not only was it a chalky tournament, but it was also a lot of blowouts. I think the women's side had some more interesting games. I mean, the Iowa-South Carolina game really had some drama. Iowa jumped out to a really big lead early in the game. South Carolina fought back and took the lead. And then Iowa was kind of chasing them and got it down to like 5 or 6. And it looked like things were getting real dicey for South Carolina. But the thing that's made them so unstoppable is they just have a physicality and size that most other teams don't have. And that's been something that Iowa has struggled with this year. They got out-rebounded just by a significant margin in this game. It was 51 to 29 by total rebounds. Offensive rebounds were 18 to 7 in favor of the Gamecocks. And really just getting those second chance points is a huge thing in the tournament when, you know, maybe some people are having a cold shooting night. Caitlin Clark played really, really well, but it did seem to me like she had 18 points in the first quarter. It did seem to me like she had kind of worn down by the end of the game and a lot of her shots were missing short. And they just really, you know, tried to body her whenever they could, run her off the line whenever they could. And so they had a really good game plan for it. Yeah, I mean, they're a deserving champion, South Carolina. I'm happy as a Virginia fan for Don Staley, although I will admit I was rooting for Caitlin Clark. I think it would have been a good end of her career story, and I think it would have been good for women's basketball had she managed to win. But, you know, it's also great for women's basketball to have a excellent undefeated team that is like one of the best teams in women's history.
I think that there is a misconception around Iowa that like they're just Caitlin Clark and there's not any other players on that team that can play. I mean, they certainly have other talented players, but they don't have the depth that South Carolina has. And I mean, that was very evident in this game. I felt that, you know, South Carolina was able to overwhelm Iowa, not just with a size difference, but also with a difference in depth of talent and just being able to kind of continue to send players at Iowa's defense. And I mean, you saw it sort of, you know, especially in the bench point breakdown. I think Iowa had 0 points off of the bench, which is not what you want in a championship game. But, you know, you then compare that to they got a lot. South Carolina got a lot, especially from freshman Tessa Johnson. But Full Wiley was good off the bench, as well as Ashlyn Watkins. And so that depth, I think, just kind of was overwhelming for Iowa. Also, just, yeah, I mean, across the women's and the men's game, as much as we talk about modern basketball and getting away from post play and bigs, and it's all about the guards now, I mean, college basketball this year came down to having players with size. So between Cardoso on the women's side for South Carolina, and then on the men's side, obviously we saw Monday night a showdown between two of just the biggest humans in college basketball. I mean, like, you know, it was not a good year for the size doesn't matter crowd.
Yeah, it definitely strange to see, given how much the game has changed, how much is reliant on 3-point shooting, to have multiple teams on both sides of the tournament really come down to bigs. And, you know, that's true for NC State too. Not that they're only reliant on DJ Burns, but he was a significant part of the reason that they made a Final Four run. I really enjoyed the back and forth with Klingon and Edie. That was a really good matchup. And UConn made the decision to just not double team Edie for most of the game. And early on, it seemed like maybe that was going to be a problem because Edie got real hot early in the game and was pouring in shots. But the result of that was no one else on their team was getting open 3-point opportunities. And eventually Edie wore down a little bit too. I mean, he still scored 30 points, but it did seem like he just didn't have as much in the tank later in the game. And Purdue, a team that is very reliant on 3-point shooting, only had taken 2 attempts at halftime, which is just, you know, not a winning formula for them. And I felt like watching the game, I felt like the game was over at halftime, even though it was only a 6-point game. I felt like Purdue had played really well. Edie had scored a whole bunch of points, and they were still down 6. It was just like that. At that point, UConn had kind of withstood whatever it is that Purdue had and then could kind of wear them down over the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like Purdue had thrown their biggest punches, you know, in that first half and was giving it everything just sort of to hang in there. And, you know, for those of us who had watched UConn, it just sort of felt like the inevitable was coming, right? That they were going to go on a run. But I mean, Purdue hits 1-3 in the entire game. They shoot 1-for-7 from the 3-point line. That's not a winning formula for them, right? But it's not really a winning formula for anybody. I think this UConn team is unique in that they've had a couple wins in this tournament where they haven't shot the ball, you know, particularly well, but have managed to still pull out a win because they score in such a variety of ways. And I thought they did a good job of, you know, I think ultimately this is the strategy to use against a guy like Zach Edey, which is to kind of let him get his and don't let the other guys beat you. You know, NC State had a similar strategy that I think if they had made shots would have turned out a lot better. But yeah, I mean, neither team shot the ball particularly well. UConn, I mentioned 1-for-7 for Purdue. UConn shot 6-for-22 from 3. That's not like a shooting performance that you're going to be thrilled about. But, you know, I just felt like the ability to kind of clog things up in the middle with just one person. So, you know, Klingon obviously is huge and good defensively. I thought Caravan a couple times ended up down there. Samson Johnson ended up on him off the bench. And they just had the depth as well to be able to absorb, you know, they got into some foul trouble, but they have enough players to continue to throw at him. There were some first half doubles that they showed, I think just to keep him kind of on his toes, which we've talked about that you kind of have to do against really good post players. You can't let them get too comfortable with a one particular defensive look. And so, you know, it's an interesting game when you look at the breakdown statistically. It just doesn't look like UConn dominated, right? Like all of the stats are very similar down the line. The teams shot a similar percentage from the floor. you know, UConn out-rebounded Purdue. That's probably the big difference maker. They didn't turn them over a ton. Points in the paint were relatively even. They did, like I said, they hit a few more threes, but there's nothing that jumps out as like, oh, it looks like UConn would have dominated this game, but they just played a more complete game and they're the more complete team.
Yeah, the really the only stat that there is a ton of difference between the two teams is in assists. I mean, UConn had 18 assists. Purdue only had 8 over the course of the game. And UConn just runs really great looking sets. As a basketball coach, you sit there, and I know you, like early on in the first half, you were sending our coaching chat group some plays that you had seen off the board, and like it's just very stylistically pleasing to watch them. Lots of movement, lots of screens, people are going all over the place, they're sharing the ball, they're pinging it around, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And you know, this UConn team is a fun, dominant team to watch. I do have to say though, I kind of hate Dan Hurley. I mean, he's just a little bit much. Like, you know, early in the game, in particular, in the first half, he was just berating officials on every single possession. Every time there was any kind of contact, as if his players were incapable of getting fouls called, running onto the court and like pushing his own player as the game is going on, like mouthing off at Zach Edey, just a whole lot, man. Like, you know, on the South Carolina side, I'm like really happy for Dawn Staley. I think she's a great ambassador of the game. She used her post-game speech immediately to talk eloquently about how Caitlin Clark was rising through the ranks and going to make basketball better for everybody. Very gracious winner. And then Dan Hurley, on the other hand, is like post-game press conference immediately going into recruiting mode. You know, like they haven't even lifted the trophy yet. So I'm kind of annoyed by him.
I get it. You know, I kind of like that, like his vibe, but that's just kind of, I don't know. I don't love it. I wish I had it up for coaching for my team, right? I mean, Kevin Keats has earned himself a lot of time now, but if we had to replace him, I think somebody like Dan Hurley, just first of all, I mean, he's brilliant, right? Like, if people are into X's and O's, that play they ran, I want to say it was in the second half. Yeah, it was like midway through the second half or so, where they set up kind of a horns look with a skip pass over to the weak side, and they've been running this where then they bring Cam Spencer around to come get a handoff and take a three, but they had Caravan slip the screen because Edie was sagging off of it, and just resulted in just an absolutely beautiful, like, just easy layup. They do such a good job of setting things up, you know, in the first half, so that then they can come back in the second half and give you some slightly different looks. So he's brilliant X's and O's wise. I mean, he does some things that, like, of course, like, he complains about everything. That play you mentioned where he steps on the court to push Cam Spencer into an action, basically. I literally think it looks like he forgets where he is. He forgets that they're in a game and he can't just do that. And then he like blacked out and forgot he did it and complained to the ref for getting mad about it. Like, I don't know. I just think that he like is so ultra competitive and gets so into the moment that he sort of loses track of what's going on. That the moment of like him and Edie yelling at each other after that one, you know, what he thought should have been an illegal screen. Like, you don't really want to see stuff like that necessarily. I that may be a bridge too far. But it's just his passion for it is definitely, you know, I think part of what makes him successful, you know. So, yeah, I mean, he deserves a ton of credit, obviously. I mean, I don't think anybody's not giving him that credit. But this is impressive, right? I mean, I just he's more likable than his brother. So at least there's that.
Hmm. Yeah, we should do a ranking of likability with the Hurleys. That would be a tough one. But. All the whole family.
I mean, their dad is number one.
Yeah, probably. You know, they've seen a lot of stats. Here are two of my favorites that have come out of the resulting championships here for UConn. One is specific to UConn. Since 1999, UConn has missed 32% of the NCAA tournaments that have happened. But they've won 24% of the titles. Like, they've missed the tournament, but still won 24% of the titles. That's crazy. The other one people in the Midwest, if we have any Midwest listeners, won't like this one. Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois are a combined 0 of 10 in the last 22 men's basketball title games.
Ooh.
Come on, Rust Belt. Got to pick up.
Man, I mean, that it is interesting, right? When you like think about just the Big Ten as a conference, and we talk like there's a storied history there. There's always some Big Ten teams that are in the conversation. Why can't they win it all? Like what is it about? I mean, obviously I think it may be just coincidence, but you know, what is it about the Big Ten that just makes them, you know, is that a mid-major conference now in basketball?
Yeah. I mean, I was struck at the beginning of the tournament when they had that teams that are in, you know, the Sweet 16 or whatever. And it's like so east, like so many teams east of the Mississippi or like close to the Mississippi. There just haven't been a lot of successful Western teams recently. I guess Gonzaga hasn't been able to win the big one. It's been a while since Arizona won, UCLA. But I feel like we're just, it's a definite East Coast bias.
It is. And you mentioned just UConn. I want to, like, thinking about UConn's success and this, like, I don't want to fall into the conversation that I think, like, it feels like national talking heads get really wrapped up in what programs qualify as blue bloods.
So stupid.
It is so stupid. I mean, you look at UConn, they've been to the Final Four 7 times and have won 6 titles in that time. When you compare that to other programs, Duke and Carolina, I think Carolina's been to the Final Four like 21 times and has won 5 titles, I believe, maybe 6. And so it's just kind of crazy to compare that. But then, like you said, then UConn also, in the last 17 tournaments, UConn's missed 7 of them, which is the same number that Gonzaga, Kansas, Michigan State, Duke, Purdue, Carolina, and Wisconsin have missed combined. So those are teams that aren't winning titles, you know, outside of, you know, obviously, you know, Duke and Carolina have won titles in that time period, as has Kansas. But, you know, they're not always getting there. But it's also just crazy. Like, this is 4 titles since 2010 with 3 different coaches for UConn. And so it's just it's a wild way they've done it. And this year, I mean, it's not. Obviously, the comparison is going to be there to the Florida program that won in 06 and 07, but they did it in a different way, right? Like, Dan Hurley kind of had to rebuild this team, or at least retool it, right? There's guys there that were there, but are playing in much bigger roles, but had to, you know, get some new guys as well. And unlike that Florida team that was just returning everybody when they repeated, it's just really impressive. And you know, I think on both sides, you're looking at, with the Connecticut men and the South Carolina women, just dynasty programs that, because of their depth and ability to recruit and just ability to coach, those two coaches are going to have their teams winning for years to come.
Yeah, I kind of agree, which makes me sad. I was rooting for Purdue. I was hoping on the 5-year anniversary of UVA climbing the mountain, winning the national championship, that Purdue would have been able to do the same thing a year after losing to the 116 thing. I know some people think that would have like taken away from the specialness of UVA's title, but I don't know. I was kind of hoping that they would get one. I don't dislike Matt Painter. I think he's a pretty good coach too, and he has to deal with insane fan yelling at him and wanting him to be fired despite the track record that he has. And kind of, I don't know, there's like a solidarity I feel in that with the Purdue fan base as a UVA fan. I mean, literally, not to get on a side rant here, but I will say, as much as I love our Sabre.com listeners and readers, there were some opportunities of the 5-year anniversary yesterday. People were using that as not an opportunity to celebrate, remember, dust off some photographs or videos or whatever. They were using it as like, we've fallen so far. We're never going to win again. Tony Bennett must change everything he does. This is pathetic. It's like, y'all, is this how you celebrate your 5-year wedding anniversary? This would be, happy anniversary,
really,
honey.
Really follow it up.
Here's, yeah, I mean, like, you just don't look quite as pretty as you used to. And let's use this opportunity to just think about those fights that we had recently. Been a lot more fights, you know, like that's just, I don't know. For me, it was like, take a minute and just appreciate that this happened.
Yeah. I wouldn't identify the Virginia fan base as one that I find particularly good at just being happy with how things are, being content, which, you know, I'm can be a good thing. You never want to get complacent, right? But I don't know. You're still the only team to have that kind of turnaround now. You know, Purdue couldn't quite, which shows you, like, and this is where I think, to go with your point, what Virginia fans should be happy about is this shows just how difficult and how remarkable that was. So it's a good time to look back at that and celebrate that, because this Purdue team was really good and couldn't manage to do what Virginia did 5 years ago. And so it should be a good opportunity to celebrate that, not a woe is me kind of thing. Like, you know, nobody really feels bad for a team that just won a championship 5 years ago and still is like consistently at the top of the ACC. Yeah. Any UVA fans looking for sympathy out there, I don't know that you're going to get it from a whole lot of people, but whatever, just celebrate the good times. Right. And I think that, like, Purdue, you know, Purdue and Iowa women both, it's a perfect opportunity to look at it and say, like, here you had two, each of them had a just transformative type player in Purdue with Zach Edey and Iowa with Caitlin Clark. And just because you didn't win a championship doesn't mean it was a failure, right? I mean, I think both those players changed those programs and brought a lot of good to those programs. And, you know, a lot of coaches say this every year, but only one team gets to win the whole thing, you know? So there's no shame in coming up just short of that. Now, if Zach Edey had gone out and lost to a 16 seed again, then yeah, you could be like, okay, this wasn't what it needed to be. But I don't know, he kind of gave you everything he could, and Caitlin Clark gave Iowa everything she could. And, you know, when you come up one game short, one half short, really not a lot of shame in that.
We've talked about this offline, but it's interesting, the anniversary gifts that you're supposed to give at different year marks. So there's like the traditional one, which the 5 year anniversary is wood, you know, maybe some hardwood, remember basketball. But then they have these like modern one. And the modern one was invented by, I don't know, who decided the modern one is silverware. That's not nearly as exciting as, you know, as something wood. Carved out of wood. I don't know. Chiseled out of wood, that might be better. But like some of the modern ones is like, we're going to give you electronics and candy. Doesn't have the same meaning to them.
I'm a sucker for those Nerds gummy clusters. That's the only anniversary gift I need.
Hey, you mentioned
throw in a fork too.
You mentioned fan bases that shouldn't get any kind of sympathy. I feel like this is a good transition point to the other story that happened right before the championship game of men's basketball. Seemingly got more traction than the actual game itself. John Calipari leaving Kentucky and not getting fired, but leaving of his own free will, kind of, and going to Arkansas within the SEC, a school that definitely has a very strong NIL structure. But it is jarring. Like, you sent this to me at night when the rumors were coming through, and I like just kind of didn't believe it when you first sent it to me. I was like, this is just not going to happen. And then it did. Like, you just never see a coach at that level leave a team that is widely considered one of the three or four best coaching jobs in college basketball to go somewhere in conference that is not considered that. I mean, like, whatever you think about Arkansas, I think it's a place you can win in. Nolan Richardson obviously had great years in the 90s, but it is not Kentucky in terms of prestige, recruiting, fan support. And it's just wild to see that. I still don't even know what I think about it, other than it's just incredibly weird that it happened.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. And because you left off with talking about how weird it is, I just want to build on that. And let's trace the domino effect here. John Calipari ends up at Kentucky essentially because USC's coach Andy Enfield leaves for SMU so he can coach in the ACC. None of this makes any sense, right? And then Eric Musselman leaves Arkansas to go to USC. And what the other part of this that I find just super entertaining and interesting, right, is that, like, from all the reports were basically that people around Arkansas were sort of happy to see Eric Musselman go, that he kind of like weighs on people after a while. But the interesting thing then is, like, there's sort of this feeling that Kentucky fans and Kentucky people may have been not necessarily happy, but not feeling totally negative about Calipari going, and that they felt like there was a need for a change. The statement he put out today, I thought he actually did a really good job of navigating this and sort of the way he phrased it in saying that he felt like it was time for the program to hear another voice. And, you know, I appreciated the way that he kind of talked about this. And look, he's done a lot of good for that program. I mean, consider where Kentucky was when he came in, right? It wasn't exactly in this position that it has been historically and that it has been in recent years. Did he have as much deep tournament success as they would have liked? No, of course not, right? And recently he was struggling early in the tournament, and it's hard to, you know, quantify why that is necessarily. I think, you know, the young roster thing became hard again, right? But he was bringing in a lot of talent and it wasn't quite translating. And I think maybe he just needs sort of a fresh start. I mean, I think he could be really good at Arkansas. It wouldn't surprise me to see him have a lot of immediate success there. I think he could navigate the transfer portal if he's able to, you know, swing some of his Kentucky recruiting class that he had coming in that was like a top three recruiting class. If he can swing some of them over to Arkansas, I think you could see some immediate success. It's a tougher brand to sell to recruits, though. It's not Kentucky. And so you're in a weird spot in limbo here where he's going to be trying to pull some of that talent over down to Arkansas. Kentucky has to make a good hire and has to make a good hire pretty quick if they want to keep that. And I think that's going to be their challenge, right? Is, you know, Billy Donovan's name has come up and he has said his focus is on the bowls and he doesn't really want, doesn't seem to want to move back to the college game. The other two big names we see a lot or we're hearing a lot, Nate Oates of Alabama, obviously. He's having, you know, Final Four success at Alabama, though, and his buyout is like $18 million. And then the other name that I think is actually probably the most likely is Scott Drew from Baylor. I actually could really see him jumping over to Kentucky and taking that on.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And I don't want to get too far into this because I know that in the interim, before this episode gets released, they will hire somebody else. But I just want to push back on one thing that you said, which was, you know, his statement that Kentucky needs another voice. The translation of that is, I am sick of you people telling me and, you know, screaming at me, trying to get me fired, despite the fact that I've won a national championship here. I have a lot of recruits. I generally do very well here. And I've just had a couple of bad games against St. Peter's and Oakland. And now you're trying to run me out of town? No. Screw you. I'm leaving. Goodbye. Like, that's what he wants to say. That's the, like, if you had the Key and Peele Obama interpreter behind him. Like, that is what that would be. That is his message there. And I'm sorry. Like, I get it from Kentucky's perspective that it's frustrating. But you, how many schools would fire their coach right now if John Calipari was available? Like, if you could press a button and make him available right now, I would say 300 of the 300 plus schools that exist in D1 would literally shoot their coach out of a cannon into the sun if it meant that they could have John Calipari there. It's just crazy to me that this relationship broke down like it did.
Oh, he's a top tier coach that, you know, love him or hate him, and I think most people hate him, but love him or hate him, like, he is better than, like, odds are he's better than your favorite team's coach. Like you're saying, like, you know, outside of your, like, Dan Hurley, I'd put Tony Bennett kind of on the same level as him, at least. It's hard to find many more coaches outside of you know, Izzo, kind of like that kind of group, Mark Few, like that group of people. It's hard to find many more that you wouldn't replace with Calipari, like you're saying. And so it's interesting to hear. I mean, like you said, he definitely was not saying what he wanted to say in his statement, which is why I liked it so much. I thought it was so clear what he wanted to say, but he did a good job of not saying it and giving something that seemed real enough But then it's fascinating to see then, like, yeah, fans try to talk themselves into like, oh yeah, well, you know, we weren't winning and Jack Golke tore us apart, so he's got to go. And it's like, it is absurd. This would be the equivalent. I mean, not totally, but you know, if Virginia had like fired Tony Bennett after losing to UMBC and not allowing, you know, you slip up and you don't get a chance. And this is a guy who brought a national championship to Kentucky, has been to Final Fours, has won SEC titles, is bringing in top five recruiting classes year in and year out. And you kind of pushed him out. You pushed him out. And he, look, it's either that or he just really loves Tyson chicken nuggets and the Arkansas boosters were able to lure him in with that. But I don't know. Like, I generally have liked Calipari more than I think the average fan does. But still, like, you're pushing me now to a point where I'm going to be pulling for him next year. I want Arkansas to go to the Final Four. I want to see, and I hope they beat Kentucky in that path, which they'll have to, like, in the season. But I hope there's, like, a Sweet 16 game that's Kentucky-Arkansas, or even Elite Eight or something like that, and they just get to beat Kentucky, and he gets that kind of revenge. Because I think I hate fans, honestly, is what it comes down to. And I just hate this like idea that you couldn't just be grateful for what you had, and now you've pushed out a Hall of Fame coach who's now going to go to a place where he'll have the resources. It's not like he's going to, you know, some tiny school. He'll be successful there.
There are 7 active coaches with a national championship. 7. That includes him. And Kentucky's reasoning was, that's fine, we can get rid of this guy. We'll just go get one of the other ones. We'll just go get Hurley. What's he up to? Oh, he's winning 2 championships in a row. He's going to leave that structure where they love him. They worship the ground he walks on and go to Kentucky, a place that literally just chased out with pitchforks the guy who had won them a national championship. Yeah, that makes sense. Good job, Kentucky. I think this is... I need to amend what I've said about you and NC State. NC State is not the most delusional fan base. They maybe have the grievance-oriented fan base, but they're not the most delusional fan base. Kentucky is by far the most delusional.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd, and I don't know. Like, they are so... that's just what kept popping into my head as you said that. It's just the sheer delusion here. The idea that there's something better for them, that there's this, I don't know, like, Adolph Rupp isn't walking through that door. You're not, this isn't the same as it used to be. And it's always going to be, I don't know, maybe they go out and get Patino back. Like, is that what they want? Is that
some people do? Some people absolutely do. It's
that's one of the only moves that would get me looking at it like, okay, I mean, like, you at least found something that I think maybe, which is crazy, because I don't think that is necessarily a good move. I mean, like, Scott Drew, I would look at and say, yes, that is it. You got yourself a good coach to replace Patino, but it's not going to look the same, and I think it would take him some time to retool that program to what he wants it to be, and do they have patience for that? Like, I don't think so. And, you know, you're not in a position where there's like good young coaches left that you would want. And I don't think that, you know, Big Blue Nation is going to be into that. I think you could go get yourself like, one of the hot names that ended up signing an extension was Dustin Kearns at App State. They're not, Kentucky fans aren't going to like that. They need a big name. You know, do you go get Richard Pitino from New Mexico? Like, what's the... I just don't know what you can do here that's going to make people happy. It's going to lead to success. This whole story was wild. And I just think, like, up until less than 5 minutes before Calipari posted his statement online, there were reports that Mitch Barnhart, the Kentucky AD, still had not talked to him. This whole thing was just, I don't know. I saw some reports that he was trying to leverage Kentucky to, like, give him a raise. But it's just so messy, and I can't wait to see what Kentucky does. I can't wait to see who they decide is going to put them in a good position to be everything that they dream themselves to be, and I can't wait to see them fall flat on their face.
I mean, Scott Drew would be a great hire if they managed to con Jay Wright out of retirement, which I don't think they that there's any chance of that happening. That would be a great hire. Most other hires, I think, would be bad. But you just look at like everything surrounding the story, and then story comes out, and what is Calipari doing? He's walking his dog in like a little shopping cart, you know, stroller.
I'm telling you, that thing was
like,
full of chicken nuggets.
Sure. I hope it was.
Chicken nuggets and cash. Hey, let me throw a name out there and see what you think. Brad Stevens. A, would he do it? B, would it be good? Is that something that, you know, would be enough at least to excite Kentucky fans? I don't know if it would be successful or not, but
I don't know. I feel like he's been out of the game long enough that people, I don't know. I feel like Kentucky fans would just think he's a nerd. He's like a paper pushing nerd. They'd be like, we need somebody. Locker. Yeah. I feel like Patino is the most interesting. That's like one of those, you know, people that date in high school and then they go their separate ways and then they turn like 85 and then somehow find love again. You know, that's you hear one of those stories in Good Morning America every once in a while. I feel like that's the story I'm rooting for.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely could make an argument that his time at Kentucky came to an end prematurely.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
So
there you go.
Yeah. Both of them in there. No, I, you know, I'm excited to sort of watch the transfer portal unfold over these next couple of weeks. Robbie Avila from Indiana State entered the transfer portal. Who's going to go get themselves some Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Is there a better DJ Burns replacement? Just in terms of like having another America's darling, I think Kevin Keats should go get that guy.
The only thing about him is I feel like he would come in and everyone would expect just this like awesome personality that DJ Burns has that could just light up a room and just, you know, all the cameras magnify. And I feel like he would just be more like, hey, I'm just here to play basketball. And yeah. Everyone would be disappointed. Yeah.
That's true. The other interesting one, Mark Mitchell today. Did you see that?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that. Although I will say I know multiple friends of mine who are Duke fans who throughout Duke's run in the tournament spent the entire game texting about how Mark Mitchell was secretly attempting to sabotage from within and ruin Duke's chances because of how badly he played. So he might just need a fresh piece of scenery as well.
Could be a good UVA fit. Hell of a defender. He can't shoot the ball.
Can't shoot.
Perfect fit.
Doesn't make free throws. He's perfect. Put him.
Sign him up.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'm excited to watch the portal, and we will definitely talk more about that as we go. But for now, that's the end of our season. Our college basketball season's gone. We'll now have to pretend to care about hockey or baseball or something like that. But it's sad. Hope you enjoyed it.
It's a good year. It's funny as I have a different perspective on it now. Obviously, like wasn't really enjoying myself a month ago. But you know, postseason AP poll came out, NC State finished the season ranked number 10. So that's higher than that. What's wild about that is that's higher than we ranked in the postseason poll in 1983 when we won the national title. After that year, they were ranked 16th, which I think is hilarious to me. Yeah, I mean, can't really complain. I had a ton of fun this season. Both men and women from NC State made the Final Four. We had lots of good storylines throughout the year. Got to see a historically great team on both sides. Got to see some historically great players in the men's and women's game. It was a fun year. Let's go watch some college baseball or something like that.
Your NC State run is really like a long Quentin Tarantino movie. It's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it was like long and slow and nothing's happening, and it's, you know, it's kind of entertaining as it goes, but you're just like, all right, whatever. And then all of a sudden, just like somebody's got a flamethrower at the end and like eight people have died, and it's all the last 5 minutes. You're like, yeah, amazing.
It was very Tarantino-esque because there were also lots of discussions about DJ Burns's feet. So
I was gonna make a feet joke too, but you beat me to it.
Sorry, buddy.